ear, piece on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson.
Nerd Up.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with
Eric Billingsley.
Oh, dang, sorry. Tim Mattson.
Tim Cooker.
So, we're here to talk about all things nerdy as we can get. And we're going to start off with the biggest stinker in the world, I have a feeling. But first of all, before we get into this bad news, all right, let's talk about stupid stuff. Nerdy stuff, but first stupid stuff. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, this latest movie. Oh, my gosh. You guys, I went and saw it so that you didn't have to. I know you didn't plan on it either, so... But
there was never any danger of that happening.
Well, I felt obligated, you know, to at least let our audience know that, I don't know, I walked into the theater thinking, okay, maybe it's not that bad. Maybe it'll be all right. Man, was I let down. Even going in thinking it was going to be pretty bad, it was worse. So, first of all, they redid the origin story. We knew they were going to do that, and they totally got the, it was just, no, the way they redid it to make it a plot point. And, when they retell an origin story to make it a plot point, they'd better do a good job. Well, they didn't even come close. So they redid the origin story. That was bad. The Turtles, CGI, not so great. I will say the fight scenes were kind of cool to watch, but I think that's about the only thing I can say nice about this film. Will Arnett had the only four funny moments in the movie, and one of them was what you'd call a Michael Bay, I'm not gay, moment. And, I mean, he had every single Michael Bay movie, there's a moment where there's some guy in there, you know, has to protest how much he's not gay somehow, some way. That moment occurred in this movie with Will Arnett, and Will Arnett should be ashamed of himself for even being in the movie. Also, the Michael Bay-isms were crazy, even though he only produced it. The sound effects, for no reason, were in there. They're sliding down this snow-covered mountain, which I got another issue with. And all of a sudden, you hear these weird sound effects for things that are happening that the sound effect does not even come close to anyone's imagination. It's just weird. It's kind of like, what do you call it? The Transformers fart, Tim?
Wow.
Yeah. There was moments like that, and it's like, well, where's that coming from? And, oh, man. There's all sorts of weird... Okay, mountains, snow-covered mountains. They have to get to downtown New York City in 5 minutes, all right? They have to do it within 5 minutes. They're on the top of this snow-covered mountain.
In New York City.
In New York City, yes. 5 minutes away. Where is this occurring? So, I mean, what? And these are nice big mountains.
Hey, Gil?
Yeah?
Aren't turtles cold-blooded? Wouldn't they freeze on a snow-covered mountain?
That's another, yes. Oh, and like I said, these are beautiful mountains. And they're going down. I mean, at one point they reach a place and that the guy says, oh, that's a 500-foot cliff. Hey, but there's the sewer we need to enter that gets to New York in 5 minutes. That just makes no sense at all. Okay, Megan Fox still cannot act.
Shocking.
I'm trying to find something good to talk about this, but I can't. Actually, hold on. I got Art Isaac in here.
Did they eat pizza?
Oh, they did, and they had 99 cheese pizza. But I asked my stepson who works at Pizza Hut, who happens to be... you know, one of the sponsors, because their Pizza Hut logo is all over this film, that and Orange Crush. But I asked him, he said, no, we don't have 99 cheese pizza, so I was kind of upset. But Isaac is in here right now, and he saw it with me. Isaac, can you think of anything good?
Mikey stayed the same.
Well, okay, sort of.
Mikey is literally the exact same, except, you know, his design, but his attitude is the exact
yeah,
same.
Yeah, okay, so they kept Michelangelo's attitude in there. Oh, and what was it? One of them, they said, oh, I got to get his katana.
Most of them make this mistake anyway, but it's actually not a katana. It's a... I forget what it's called. It's like a...
Kaijutsu? No.
A ninja...
It's a Japanese word.
It's a Japanese word for short sword.
Yeah, there we go. And, yeah, the Japanese word for short sword. And, anyway, in the middle of the movie, they said, I gotta get his katana, and Isaac goes, he doesn't use a katana. So they couldn't even get that right. So... in other words, don't bother. I don't understand how it was number one in the box office, unless, like I was mentioning earlier to someone, is that, you know, there's a bunch of 20 and 30-somethings that, you know, grew up with the cartoon, and they were all, you know, getting all sentimental. and nostalgic, and they said, I have to go see it, and then they realized how bad it was once they saw it. But no, that's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Horrible movie. Don't see it. Don't even buy it on DVD. Don't rent it. Don't even bother. Go see the one where Vanilla Ice sings the theme song. You know, go Ninja. Go, you know, that one. Go see that one.
Go see Guardians again. Yeah. That's what you should do with your money.
Yeah, don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. See something else.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. So, yeah, go see Guardians of the Galaxy. You're better off. Well, let's move on to another movie that I saw that actually I'm glad Isaac's in here. He might be able to talk about this one a little bit better. But we went and saw is a limited release. Dragon. Well, hold on. Anything you guys got to say about Turtles?
I'm glad we're done talking about it.
I'll agree with that. Anyway, we went and saw the limited release of Dragon Ball Z Battle of God. It was, I don't know, not being a Dragon Ball Z fan, I went and saw this with Isaac anyway. And it's pretty interesting. You have to be a Dragon Ball Z fan to really appreciate it, though. There's a lot of little humorous bits in it, as are, well, in every single Dragon Ball Z episode. But there is one moment that stands out most for me, and it's when the bad guy, what was his name again? Beerus. Yeah, Beerus says, how long will it take us to get to Earth? And his assistant says, 26 minutes, sir. And he says, 26 minutes. That's about the length of the average anime. We can do it. Then the rest of the show goes on. Now, I will say, before I'm going to turn it over to Isaac a little bit and let him give a little brief summary or something, but I will say this. You'd think with the title Battle of Gods, you're going to have this big, huge buildup, and then at the end of the movie, there's going to be a big, huge battle. Well, there was a big, huge battle at the end of the movie, but what happens is that this bad guy, Beerus, he crashes a birthday party, and all of this time he's just kind of, you know, eating food, drinking the drinks, and celebrating the birthday party, and it's weird.
It's funny.
Have you guys ever seen Dragon Ball Z?
Never had.
I've got to say, as a pretty thorough anime fan, Dragon Ball Z is probably one of the most overrated classic animes on the face of the earth. I really don't like it. It's really super dull. It's just, oh man. In fact, what I really want to do is take like an entire season of Dragon Ball and edit out all the dialogue, because I guarantee about half of it is nothing but them grunting.
Yes.
Just ridiculous.
Now, I don't know. It's pure silliness. I mean, I like anime. I really like anime. I mean, I've liked anime ever since I saw, what was it, Doomed Armageddon, and then after that, Akira. I think those are the two movies that got into anime. This is just silliness in my feelings. I don't know. It wasn't for me, but it was for Isaac. So I'm going to have him give a little synopsis, and I'm going to let him give a little review, so to speak. So make it short, Isaac. Give it what you can.
If you're real Dragon Ball fan, Dragon Ball Z, whatever, then you're guaranteed to enjoy this movie. And even if you're not a Dragon Ball Z fan or Dragon Ball fan, I can guarantee you'll like it better than TMNT. But it's like a lot of Dragon Ball Z things. You're not going to have a whole bunch of action till the near end. It's just going to be, you know, humor almost 100% of the time, which is kind of a nod to Dragon Ball, the original series in itself, because that was not really based on action. That was meant to be funny and kind of childish funny, immature funny. And the movie, I don't know how to describe it other than it's good. It's got great, like, effects. It's like the Godzilla movie. Like, the old ones will always kind of stay better, but it's got better effects and it looks cooler. It's better to look at.
I have one question.
Yes.
Do you need a Dragon Ball bat and a Dragon Ball mitt to play Dragon Ball?
You know, do you? Need a Dragon Ball bat and a Dragon Ball mitt to play? I'm looking at me with that face. To play Dragon Ball. Well, no, this is Z. Yeah, it was silly, and you got to be a big fan. Now, I will tell you this. We saw it in a really large theater in Indianapolis. This theater was about three of what Eagle Theater in Robinson holds. So it's a really big, huge stadium, and almost felt like I was in an IMAX, but it might have been because I was only three rows up from the front. It was cram-packed. There were maybe one or two empty chairs, and those were around me. The fan base loved it. God bless them. That's all I can say. I don't know. Like I said, there are a couple of humorous parts, but that's about it.
I'm going to pipe up from the back here and just say that it's still better than Naruto.
Better than Turtles, too. That brings me to a movie that's coming out in November. And Tim Coker, I especially want your input on this. Being a comic book fan, I know you haven't read too much of these because I don't know of anybody that has. But Big Hero 6, coming out in November. And it's a Disney film based on Marvel Comics. Short run, a miniseries of Big Hero 6. Tim, are you familiar with the Big Hero 6 at all?
Only from seeing the covers here and there at the comic shop. But I sure like the look of the trailers I've seen.
Well, I'm surprised. Well, I'm actually not surprised. Now that Disney owns Marvel, I'm guessing they could, you know, kind of mess with anything they want. But looking at the trailer, it looks like they're going to stick pretty much to the comics. Now, I haven't read, I've read only maybe one or two of the comics, and that was only because there was a crossover with all of Marvel Comics for a Spider-Man run called End of Days, and this is where Doc Ock was going to destroy the world. It was the series right before Doc Ock took over Peter Parker's brain and became Superior Spider-Man. It's a really good series. There's at one point where Spider-Man is having to hop the globe to try to stop these little things that Doc Ock has put in to destroy the world. And he has to make a stop in Japan, where Big Hero 6 comes in. The group, it was real silly, like an anime, like Dragon Ball Z, whenever they were taking... I mean, mm-hmm. they have characters like... well, let me see. One of the characters' name is Wasabi No Ginger. There's also Fred, who's also known as Fredzilla. Fredzilla can transform into a Godzilla-like creature. Imagine that. The two characters you see in the trailer mainly are Hero and Baymax. Baymax would be the balloon-like creature you see in the trailer. In the books, though, he's kind of like a synthetic entity. Yeah, that's my dog. He doesn't like synthetic entities.
Good boy.
Good boy.
But anyway, he's like... That's the balloon creature. Baymax is actually kind of the bodyguard of this kid named Hero. He's like a super smart kid, one of those that always happens in a team of any kind. You always have to have one super smart person, be it Hank Pym or Tony Stark or, you know, whatever. In this one, it's Hero. His sidekick or his bodyguard is Baymax. And in the trailers, it's this balloon thing. It's the one where he's putting the tape in the holes. And his battery's running low. I mean, they play that off really well in the trailer. Those two are definitely in it. Now, also in the movie, they're going to have a girl named Gogo Tamago. She was actually funny in the comics, but she was still a superhero. She was raised by the Yakuza, I believe, if I remember that one right. Wasabi No Ginger. Oh, yeah, let me tell you some of the voices here. Ryan Potter will be Hero. Scott Adsit will be Baymax. Here's a good one. Damon Wayans Jr. will be Wasabi No Ginger.
Okay.
So, and also, like I said, Honey Lemon is in it. Genesis Rodriguez is playing the role of Honey Lemon. TJ Miller, that's Fred. So these are the voices. Oh, James Cromwell is in it. You know, that'll do, Piggy.
I love James Cromwell.
Yeah, so do I.
It's also the first name that you've mentioned that I know who it was.
Yeah, same here.
You didn't know Damon Wayans Jr.? Okay.
Well, oh, well, no, besides him.
Well, you got to know the Wayans family, I guess. But yeah. I think you're right. I mean, these are all relatively unknowns. I don't know exactly what all they've done except for James Cromwell. But he's going to be Professor Callahan. So it looks like an interesting take, which Disney is going to be doing a Marvel film. Or a Marvel-based film. So, I don't know. I got high hopes for this one now that I know that it's a Marvel acquisition.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me. When I watched the trailer, I was really, I have to say, very pleased that it acknowledges the source material, but it's up front a Disney movie. You know, it just says mm-hmm. inspired by or taken from the Marvel comic book. And I think that's, you know, it's, I remember when the merger first went through, or the sale, or whatever it was, and reading about a call between Pixar and Disney Animation people and Marvel, like, kind of chief creatives, to sort of spitballing what might happen. And I remember my mind kind of reeling, thinking, oh man, what kind of stuff, you know, a Pixar Marvel movie, what? But I never would have thought of this. But that's why it's perfect, is it's something that nobody can have that much invested in. It so, like Guardians of the Galaxy, it's kind of teed up to do something really cool with if they can pull it off. And I don't know. I think Disney Animation's been doing pretty well lately. I think that when I watch that balloon guy go around, he's just a delight. I mean, that makes me want to see the movie right there, is how great that character seems when he's like squeezing through and all that. So, yeah, I'm all over it.
And then later the kid invents armor for him and all this other. So, yeah. I mean, they didn't even show him in the trailer, but they say he's going to be a character. Fred is going to be a character in it. But Fredzilla, I want to see him change into this giant lizard. That's going to be cool. Hopefully they'll do that. I don't know. We don't know how far they're going to take it into the mythos of Big Hero 6. But Big Hero 6 really has not been around since, I think, 2008 is when the first actual comic. They were in Alpha Flight before that. I think they had a miniseries before that. But 2008 is when they actually had the first comic release, besides a miniseries. They haven't been around that long. And you're right. Yeah, people aren't that invested into it. You know, it'd be kind of hard to ruin something like that.
Well, the exciting thing is it's something new, something that's unproven. And, you know, if nothing else, the Guardians of the Galaxy has taught us that new and unproven IPs can make for really interesting projects.
And plus the fact that they're going to use the animation, there's no CGI needed. They're going to, you know, it's all going to be animated. They could do almost anything. And the guy changing into Fredzilla, for example, won't be that difficult, and they can make it really cool.
Okay, I don't want to be Debbie Downer here, but now when you talked about the robot, the balloon robot, I realized that I have seen this trailer. I don't know if it was playing before Guardians, or it must have been because I saw it pretty recently. I didn't remember the title, but when you started talking about the balloon robot, I realized that I had seen it. And all I could remember when I was watching it, it was like, this is so odd. It didn't strike me as funny, although it felt like they were playing it for laughs. It was just really odd. I just didn't know what to make of it. And I didn't know if that's going to be the tone for the entire film or not. But that's the only thing I really walked away from the trailer thinking is, like, how odd.
Well, you know, I kind of thought the same. I thought odd but cool until it finally dawned on me, Big Hero 6. And by the way, the run, it was Ends of the Earth was the storyline, the Spider-Man storyline. But anyway, until it finally clicked in my brain, like, wait a minute, that's a Marvel comic. And then when I started looking at it, I'm like, oh, now this looks really cool now. So I don't know if that's going to affect your decision now, Eric, or not, but that's what made me start to look at it a little more in depth.
Honestly, I feel just a little oversaturated, over-inundated with these CG animated films. You know, Pixar usually does a really good job with it, but there's just so many out nowadays. I do have, on your recommendation and everyone else's recommendation, the Lego Movie ready to go, and I'm very curious to see that because it did get such good reviews all the way around. And so, you know, if something comes out and gets universally praised, I will usually take the time to see it. But there's just so many of them, and they just seem kind of like retreads of the same story and the same themes. Like, there's one that's been advertising recently that I'm just not sure what to make of it, is the Box Trolls.
I like the artwork in it.
Yeah, the artwork looks interesting, but the story and the plot line just feels like been there, done that a dozen times.
Well,
but maybe there's something more to it, you know?
On the same lines, what about that new Guillermo del Toro animation?
Oh, that looks really stylish. I like that.
I don't know if I've heard of that.
Yeah, very. It's
the Day of the Dead movie?
Yeah, Day of the Dead artwork and stuff. What is the name of that?
Book of Love.
Del Toro directs it, or is just producing it, or what's he doing?
I believe he's producing.
Well, if it's got Del Toro's name on it, I will definitely give it a chance.
I don't know. He's got diminishing returns because he threw his name on just about anything.
Hey, he's going to be doing Pacific Rim, too.
Well, nah.
But case in point, I didn't really like that movie. I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it.
Book of Life, sorry.
Book of Life, that's it.
So he's producer.
And it's completed. We'll check out that trailer.
Jorge Gutierrez is the director.
Oh, that name I know. Is that the guy that did Mama?
He was an animator for Mad TV.
Oh,
okay. Jorge also did the screenplay. Yeah, I remember his animation work on Mad TV. Yeah.
And also a TV series called El Tigre. The Adventures of Manny Rivera.
Well, see, here's what really struck me about this movie, the Book of Life, since we kind of changed into that subject. When I saw the preview for that as well, the Danny Trejo and Ron Perlman voices, I was like, yes. But also, you got Zoe Saldana. Hey, Gamora's in this.
Yeah.
With the animated
movie.
What
color will she be in this movie?
Actually, looks like she's kind of...
Plant.
Yeah. But I'll go see any animated movie, as long as it's not a kid. Like, Cars, Planes... No, not so much. But something like this one, I think the whole Day of the Dead artwork really struck me when I saw it. And I'm like, that looks cool. And they all look like puppets and stuff. It should be interesting. But again, with Big Hero 6 being a Marvel-based story, I have to go see it. You can't keep me from it. So, all right, well, let's move on to some television stuff. First of all, I'll start out with one that I just got through watching the series Fargo. And I tell you what, guys, it's actually interesting.
Don't spoil too much because I'm still a few episodes behind.
I will say this. I think, Eric, you're the one that said that Billy Bob Thornton was Satan.
Yeah.
And there's a line in there where he's at a restaurant and he orders, and they say, well, I've got apple or cherry pie. And he goes, no good ever came out of cherry pie. So they bring him the apple, and he eats the apple. He goes, I haven't tasted pie this good since the Garden of Eden. And I was like, that's what Eric said. So So there's that. But they wrapped up the story really well. And if they do it rumor has it, they're going to do like American Horror Story.
It's anthology.
Yeah, if they do it, I could see how they could keep going with it. And I really enjoyed Colin Hanks in that. I really did. He really was he was fun to watch. And also Martin Freeman. Wow.
Yeah.
He was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, his character couldn't possibly be more different than from The Hobbit. So, I mean, it's really, you watch those roles back to back and it gives you an idea of what a versatile actor he is. And of course his role in, the Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Edgar Wright movie, The End of the World, or
World's End.
World's End.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another great role for Martin Freeman. I mean, everything I've seen him in, he's just amazing.
And I loved him in Hitchhiker's Guide. That was where I first got sold, and then he became Watson, and then even more so. But in this,
come on, let's get some love for The Office, guys.
Oh, was he in The Office?
He was the lead in The Office.
Oh, I still haven't seen the original series.
It's been too really long. It's been
you are f-ing fired.
I'm with Tim on this one.
I'll put it on my next Netflix queue.
I'd forgotten he was on that. I mean, it's been years since I saw the British version, or the original version, I should say. Yes, you're right. I forgot.
Oh my God.
Wow. I thought Ricky Gervais was the lead character on that.
No, he was the Michael Scott of the...
Yeah.
Who's the, like, kind of dreamy, hunky guy on the show that was, like, the lead guy that had, you know, on the American one?
Forgotten already.
You know who he is. He's that guy. He's the guy, and he's married to the girl, and they had a kid. And I don't know. I never really liked the American version.
John Krasinski?
Yeah. Martin Freeman played his version in the British.
Carolyn Wilson, who's one of our... A graduate from the SIU theater department had a fairly decent role in one of the episodes. She played a minister.
Nice.
Well, that makes two alum that we had in the office.
Did you guys ever see Jackie Debitson and Ben Hardy?
That's what I was getting ready to say. She played the nurse.
I didn't see her in that, but I've seen her in other things.
Yeah.
What did you say she was in, Tim?
She was in that show Party Down. Have you seen that?
No.
That's pretty great.
When she was in the office, I didn't hardly recognize her, and then chatted with her on Facebook a little bit. She said something about being in the office or something like that, and I'm like, holy crap, you're the nurse!
That's funny.
Well, we were talking about Martin Freeman, but him playing a Minnesotan with that accent and everything, it just totally shows that this guy is capable of anything. Like you guys said, when you know you've seen him in other things, he's been great. But doing a Minnesotan accent through the whole thing, and his character changes in the movie. First, he's kind of like a meek and mild guy, and he gets bullied. But about halfway through the series, it looks like he was being groomed for Billy Bob Thornton's part. And I'm not going to tell about the ending at all. I'm just saying that's how it looked about halfway through. I just want to say his character changed, and he really did a great job of pulling that out. All right. What you got, Tim?
Leftovers. Is anybody watching it?
No. Yes, I still am watching it. It's the most depressing show on earth, but I'm still watching it.
It is really super depressing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's the most bleak. It is bleak, just downright bleak. There is no. I have once in a blue moon you might get a little chuckle out of an ironic line somewhere, but I mean it's pretty hard to watch.
Now, Tim, is that the one your daughter recommended to me?
Yeah, okay. Yes. Both of the kids like it a lot. They have unusual taste. But I started watching it. I've made it through 4 episodes now. And I think I've got 3 more to go before I'm totally caught up. But it's interesting. You're right. It is very, very bleak. But there's also another British actor who has taken a hammer and beaten the dialect out of himself. Christopher Eccleston.
Really?
Right,
with a straight-up American accent that's actually quite good, I thought. Yeah, and he's good in this, but I think he's underused, unfortunately. I like him as a performer.
I didn't realize he was in this.
There's an episode that is like, almost the entire episode is around him. Have you seen that one yet?
Yes, that's the third one.
Okay.
The funny thing is, we watched 2 episodes. And the first thing I had to say to Sam afterwards, she was like, well, what do you think? I'm like, well, I was promised Christopher Eccleston, but I don't think he delivered on it. So the third episode definitely satisfied that itch. But it's really interesting. The basic premise of the show is that one day 2% of the world's population just disappeared into thin air. And it's all about, you know, 3 years later.
Is Kirk Cameron in this?
I beg your pardon?
Is Kirk Cameron in this?
No.
Okay, good.
He disappeared.
But the fact that this might be the resurrection is a big part of the story. But it's not. But at the same time, they're saying it's not, because some of the people that have disappeared are like downright horrible people that, you know, would like, you know, beat their children or their wives, or, you know, or would steal money to gamble, support their gambling addiction. So, and that's part of Eccleston's character's arc as well, is trying to out these people so that people aren't under the impression that all these people were taken to heaven, and mean, you know, which by extension means that everyone left behind is no good and worthless. So it's that's a big arc in the story.
Yeah, definitely. But it's also, there are different cults that have arisen after this. Everybody is, you know, looking for an answer, and nobody has one. I don't know. It's an interesting show. I didn't know what anybody else thought of it, or if you were even watching it.
Well, the it's written by, is it Carlton Cuse, or one of the people from Lost? I can't remember. And Tom Peralta, who wrote the book that the series is based on. Now, a mutual friend of Tim Coker and mine, Tom Stultz, posted when I said I was starting to watch it that he read the book and absolutely loved the book. And here's the thing that's going to make or break this series for me is, and so far we haven't gotten many answers. It's just every episode introduces more questions and more bizarre behavior, but there's very little in the way of answers forthcoming. If they end the show without any significant answers, it's going to really piss me off.
That's a real problem with episodic TV of this nature, because there's that balancing act of how much do you give away and how soon. And as a network TV show, you don't know how many seasons you're going to have to tell your story, and like Lost. So you can't really know how quickly to tell your story.
Yeah. Yeah, and here's the thing. I don't want to give the impression that I'm down on the story at all. It's a really good story, and I love some of the performances in it, especially Justin Theroux, who's like pretty much the lead character. He plays the sheriff of the town. I really like him as an actor, and I like his character, and I feel for the guy. And he's got this very disenfranchised daughter that he's struggling to communicate with and to make contact with in the way her mother, not being one of the people who went, you know, who disappeared, but who joined a cult after all of this happened and just like left them high and dry. There's some really, really good character work going on here, and I'm really digging that, but I'm hesitant to like follow these characters down the rabbit hole for fear that they're never going to come out of the rabbit hole. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
All right, guys, we forgot to do something during the movie section, and we got to get this out of the way because we've been holding on to this for a while now, waiting until we all got together. Tim was without internet, so we'll give him the excuse for that. Tim Matson was, but Tim Coker, you don't have an excuse.
Sorry, guys.
We watched a movie called All Cheerleaders Die, and, I guess it's a reason why we kind of delayed it. It was not my prime pick for a movie. I'll put it that way. It was good for what it was. It's one of those, I remember back in high school days, you had to go to the, you know, you took your girl to the slasher movie. That way, you know, maybe get a chance of her putting her arm around you when she got scared. That's kind of what this would equate to, is that 80s slasher movie. And it just, it's a B movie. Okay, we'll put it that way. Maybe a C movie, actually. So, All Cheerleaders Die. We had hopes for it. I mean, it had its moments. It had some dark moments that could have gone somewhere, but it stayed in the B movie realm. Eric Billings, you're more the movie expert than I am. I just like things or dislike them. So, break it down for us.
Well, let me start off by saying that the film, when you suggested, I had no idea that this was a film directed by Lucky McKee. Now, horror aficionados will recognize that name as the director of a film called May from 2002, which starred Angela Bettis, Anna Faris, and Jeremy Sisto. Very effective, creepy, goth kind of little horror film that I just really found appealing, and just it just worked for me. It worked for a lot of people. It was very highly rated for an indie horror film. Then the next thing I saw that he did was an episode of Masters. The episode was called Sick Girl, which I think also starred Angela Bettis. And it was one of the better episodes of Masters of Horror, which was, you know, like John Carpenter, Dario Argento. A lot of, you know, Masters of Horror were commissioned to do these little one-hour stories for this anthology series. And honestly, most of them were not very good. But Lucky McKee's was one of the good ones. Then he went on to do a film called The Woods, which I remember advertising. I think this was actually a studio film. It had Agnes Bruckner in it and Bruce Campbell, who we all know, Bruce Campbell Patricia Clarkson. So we had some big names, and it was, you know, a girls' school. I think it was, I didn't see it. I think there were witches involved, something like that. Now that I didn't realize
it was school,
Lucky
McKee.
I didn't realize it was Lucky McKee that directed it. Now that I do, I'll have to actually add that to my list to see. And then he's done a couple of films since then. One of them I have on Blu-ray. I just haven't gotten around to watching it yet. It's another horror film that got some decent acclaim called The Woman from 2011. But this was his most recent effort, and it is actually a remake of his first film. I don't know if this was like a student film. It was shot on video, and it was also called All Cheerleaders Die, and that was done in 2001, which explains a lot of things as far as the quality of the script.
Okay, yeah.
Did you want me to go on with my review, or did you want to...
Actually, let me give a little synopsis of what the film was about before we go into the review section. Basically, Okay, there's a team of cheerleaders. They're snotty cheerleaders, and the captain of the cheerleader squad... Well, it's funny because it happens, and it's like, wow, did that really just happen just now? It's like, she seems like she's going to be the lead role in the movie, you know? The head snob, someone's going to get revenge on her. Well, what happens is she dies. And so what they blame the captain of the high school football team. It's kind of muddled there, if you ask me. But anyway, he was supposed to catch her, and she broke her neck and landed on her head. This girl that's, I guess you'd call her the rebel, the high school rebel, she joins this cheerleading squad after showing off her mad skills. And basically, they set out to take down the captain of the football team. And it's very supernaturally, I'll put it that way. It's hard to describe. Maybe a little zombie. I don't know. But... it turns into, they got like the goth girl that's into weirdness, and she's warning them. And it's, again, it's one of those high school movies, high school horror movies that, you know, there's someone's got to be the focus of their revenge. So that's pretty much the storyline. I'll give my review real quick and dirty. It was good for what it was. If I were a younger person, I'd probably enjoy it more. But being, I wouldn't say mature, but but being older,
long in the tooth.
There you go. I didn't enjoy it as much as I thought I would. And I love horror movies, but this one just didn't stick with me.
It's just, it's the script. I mean, it's just not a tightly written script. The motivations of the characters just like change every 5 minutes. It's very inconsistent. I mean, you've got this, the main character is, at least with the way she's introduced, is trying to infiltrate the cheerleader squad because she's not really a vacuous airhead like one of them. But then she becomes one of them, or she starts to like them more than she did before. Meanwhile, she has had this lesbian affair with this really weird goth girl who is, you know, upset that she's now ditched her for these popular cheerleader friends. And so she... you know, they all basically die in a car wreck. This is not a spoiler because it happens fairly early in the film.
Well, plus it's the title of the movie.
Exactly. And the goth girl comes up on their car accident and brings them all back to life with these weird little rocks that she has. And they're, from that moment forward, they're not only all connected in a weird kind of way, but they're also basically like zombies in that they have to feed on the blood of the living, or vampires, or whatever you want to call them. But it's just...
I know, it's kind of... I didn't quite grasp, was it vampires, was it zombies? They're kind of shady on that. I mean, I think it was supposed to been zombies.
Yeah, except, but you don't see them actually eating flesh. They just basically drain the body dry. It's just... it's basically just an excuse to set up some semi-interesting horror set pieces that really aren't that impressive, you know, not to go through the entire movie just to see these set pieces. And it's pretty, I would say it's predictable if it made any sense at all. But again, like I said, this is a remake of his very first project, so I don't know why he felt the need to go back and remake this, because like I said, it's not a great script. It's not a particularly original idea, and so I feel like he's really stepping back rather than stepping forward, and which is unfortunate, because the bit of his work that I've seen, I've really enjoyed, and hopefully this is just a single misstep in his career, and he'll, you know, go on to make something much better in the future.
Well, I think also it might have been the fact that, hey, I've got this old one. I want to try to get it back on a movie, a full length. But I think the previous version was a short, wasn't it? I don't remember. I never saw the original. I remember reading about it, though. But I think he just wanted to kind of get it to a film length and release. And maybe, you know, like Billy Bob Thornton did with Sling Blade.
You know? Right, yeah.
It's like, hey, let me see what happens when I make it in a real movie. So,
except that, you know, the some call it a Sling Blade, which was the original film that it was based on, mm-hmm. was critically acclaimed, I think won some awards.
Yeah.
This did not, so I'm not sure why he felt the need to go back and revisit this.
Yeah, true.
There's some funny or semi-funny moments and black humor, you know, as you would expect in a movie with a name like All Cheerleaders Die, but there's not nearly enough of it to really hold my interest in the whole thing.
Yeah, it would be one of those, you know, Saturday night, all the people say, hey, what movie are we going to watch? And you've had a few beers in you. Oh, might as well watch this one. I don't know. I can't recommend it, but I would say, you know, some people would enjoy it, though.
But I would recommend, if you're someone that likes horror films and likes original ideas and offbeat, off-kilter indie horror films, go seek out May, M-A-Y. I think you'll like it. In fact, I haven't seen it in a long time, and I might have to revisit it after talking about it.
Well, I mean, it sounds like kind of a, you know, kind of a crap sandwich the way you guys are putting it. But was like, I'm really struck by the idea that this guy remade his first movie. Now, do you think that, was it made with joy? You know, was there any sense of like, it doesn't sound like it's really thought through or anything like that, but does it seem to have any passion behind it?
No.
I can't really say that I detected anything there. I mean, you go and watch the movie May, and you can really tell that this is something the director believed in and you know, wanted and had a vision for. I don't get that sense at all with this.
All right. Yeah, and actually, I think, Tim, I think to me it felt like, okay, I got a contractual obligation to release this many films. Here's one, you know. I'm thinking that. I don't know, but
here's a screenplay that I don't have to completely write from scratch.
Yeah, exactly. Then again, it's one of those late night Saturday drive-in midnight movie, maybe. I don't know. Back in our day, anyway. So,
is there sexy time in it?
Not much. Really, the only you know, sexy time scene that stands out is the one where the guy with and his girlfriend in the bathroom stall, and that I'm almost sure was a body double because you never saw her like topless with, you know, where you could actually see her head in the same shot. It felt really weird.
It was a weird, yeah. Well, first of all, bathroom stall. So the average 17-year-old boy would really like this movie, but he would not be admitted into it.
If you're going to make an exploitation picture, go for the exploitation. This just didn't really offer up, you know, the requisite amount on any front. You know, it didn't have enough gore to really be true horror. Didn't really have enough nudity and sex to be real exploitation. It was just kind of on the fence, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It was like, it could have gone either way, but they never did go. Yeah, in fact, it's not rated. That's why, you know, on demand and everything else. A not rated movie, you know, you have to be 18 to go into the theater if it's not. So, okay, let's move on here. Tim Mattson brought up a great topic. And, man, Tim, I'll let you just start and run.
Yeah, guys. What really kind of kicked this off with was a discussion with my son, Christian, who is an avid gamer. And he really basically just posed a question to me, wanting to know why I don't game as much as I used to, or, you know, maybe game as passionately as I used to. And it just had me really kind of rethinking my relationship to games and what I want out of them anymore. I just wanted to, you know, see what you guys thought about gaming. If you still feel like you're a gamer, if you call yourselves a gamer, or, you know, what you feel about video games anymore.
Well, I want to jump on this. I used to love video games. I used to play the crap out of Mario. But then again, games advanced and I didn't. I think that's a lot of it happened. And I think the last real video game I played, well, besides Octodad, was Tomb Raider series. And I love the puzzles in those. And that's one of the things I like about video games, is when it comes to puzzles or collecting. I love Pokemon, but I will get burned out of a Pokemon. I mean, I'll play a Pokemon game all the way through and I'm done, you know. A lot of people go back and revisit, but I can't. But I love the collecting aspect. You know, you get a Pokemon. You get all the Pokemon. You got to collect them all. I like the puzzles. And Pokemon has the puzzles. Let's see, what was another one that I had? The Spore series of games. You guys ever played any of those? Spore Heroes and...
It looked really cool.
Yeah, where you got to create your own thing, and you got to pick up pieces as you completed tasks. You collected the pieces, and you can make bigger monsters. And then online, you could always get where people... you could download other people's creations. Like, I downloaded, at the time, Mario a few Pokemon. People created them out of these little bits and pieces. And trust me, it's hard to do. It's hard to build these things in that detail for this game. But I kind of like that game. Right now I play a social game, and I play it on Facebook. People make fun of me for it, but it's the Marvel Avengers Alliance social game. I love the game. And one of the reasons is, first of all, it's Marvel. Second of all, it's one of those games that you collect. You got to collect all the heroes, and you beat all these bosses. And you've got actual goals, and you solve puzzles in some aspects of it. You get new weapons. You collect the weapons. I love the collecting. Any game based on Spider-Man, I'm in on that. Deadpool, I played his video game when they just released it last year, and it was fun. But once I played it, it's like I was done. I couldn't think of anything else. And I've never been into, like, WoW or any of those online, what do you call those? Or Skyrim. I couldn't get into those.
MMO.
Yeah, MMOs. I just couldn't get into those because, you know, there was nothing. I felt like there's nothing for me to do. You know, I got to collect something. So maybe that's the hoarder in me or something. I don't know. But that's where
I am definitely a gamer. You had mentioned, you know, when you had talked about broaching the subject of not playing as much as you used to. I don't know of any adult male who's holding down a job who can play as many video games as they did when they were, you know, in college. Because you just don't have the free time when you're working a full-time job, and you don't have the ability to stay up to all hours of the night and still be able to get up to work your job the next day. So there's a lot of things working against you. But I mean, I just looking at my Steam library right now, I have a library of 455 games. That should tell you that, yes, I am still alive and kicking in the gaming world. I don't have the reflexes that I used to, so I don't do as much multiplayer as I used to. I tend to lean more towards single-player games, although for a very long time, I was a WoW addict. I mean, I used to call it World of Warcraft. That's not my name. That's, you know, a lot of people call it that because it is designed to get you to play as much as possible and to increase on that till it takes up your entire life. And that's when, you know, when it started getting out of hand, and I was like on playing that game every available minute until, you know, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning on weeknights, I finally said, I can't keep doing this, and I canceled my subscription. So, but for several years, I was pretty heavy into playing that game, and I still will sing its praises because it is an amazing accomplishment. It's the depth of the game, the things that gives you that you can do. There's something for almost everyone in that game, and it's very much an RPG, but it's an MMO RPG. So to really, you know, get the most out of it, you do have to play with people, and you really have to have a guild to go raiding with and who will support you on these things. It's really a design from the ground up to support guilds. So you really have to find a group of people that you like and want to play with on a daily basis. And that's harder than it sounds.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be difficult to organize a bunch of people to play.
It's hard enough to organize people for a podcast.
Yeah, that's hard enough.
But I mean, you know, there's, as you can expect, there's a lot of kids on there, and I just have no desire to, okay, your kids are exceptions to the rule, both Gil and Tim. You guys have great kids. You know, they're intelligent, and they're not smart asses, or at least not that I've had any exposure to. And, you know, these kids on the internet, the ones that are gamers, a great deal of them are just, pardon my French, but little assholes. And they're unsupervised, and they think that they can get away with anything, and they do because they're anonymous on the internet, and they just take full advantage of that. So I don't like to be around them. I don't like to communicate with them, and I don't like to play with them online. So it's very, you know, and there are a lot of adults that play the game, thank God, but even finding adults that, you know, finding a guild that is mostly adults that all have the same, you know, play style, aren't like hardcore, because I was never a hardcore player. I could never go toe-to-toe with like the really heavy-duty players, but I love playing the game, and so I was somewhere in the middle, and it's just hard to find a group of people that are like-minded, you know?
Well, the one thing I just learned is that asshole is French for young gamers. Well, Tim Coker, what about you?
You know, I'm an Atari 2600 guy.
Nice.
Actually, I was miserably, miserably sad when my 2600 finally gave out. I was so bummed. I still am. I need to get another one because there's nothing like playing combat, you know. But you know, that was the thing. Gil, I really feel like you in that I feel like games really passed me by because there were a couple. I always had roommates who had, you know, the console. And then probably after the Super Nintendo, I didn't have any roommates that had consoles. And then a couple of years later, suddenly the controllers had like 10 more buttons on them and I just didn't know what to do. So like I used to be very snarky about it. Eric, I know you remember me being incredibly high-handed about it. But what it really comes down to is that like for return on investment for me, games were never great after they became more complicated, because to get any real pleasure from it, you have to play all the time. And, you know, that's time I could be spending reading a comic. It's a time I could be spending working through all of Orson Welles's movies or watching all of Doctor Who in order for the third time, you know? So, I mean, I'm not going to put myself on a pedestal, and, you know, I felt pretentious with the Orson Welles thing, so I was self-conscious anyway. So like eventually a couple of years ago, we bought a Wii and I loved it. And of course I was mercilessly mocked by Eric for buying an old people's game console because I'm not cool enough to devote my life to this stuff. So, you know, that's cool. I get it. But I actually really liked it because I feel like they made a console for the rest of us, you know, for people who aren't freaking lifers, you know, where you like to play a video game, but you don't want to spend all your free time on it. So, and I still love it. I still bust out Beatles Rock Band and I still bust out Mario Kart and Boom Blocks. And I love it. I love it. You know,
with that console, I think Nintendo did kind of reach out to a lot of people that had been left behind by video games, and some people who were never into video games, like your mom and your grandma who liked to bowl with the Wii. But, you know, video games don't have to be super complex to be fun. There are a lot of things that the Wii did really well that were a lot of fun to do.
I mean, nothing's more basic than a first-person shooter. Now, granted, there are some first-person shooters that add a lot of bells and whistles and can be a little more complex. But most first-person shooters are fairly easy to pick up. But when you get into playing multiplayer, that's when, you know, you've got to spend all this time getting good, or else it's just no fun because you get ganked left and right.
Have you played the Wii U yet, Tim Coker?
I have not. No, I've heard about it. Is it good?
I like the Wii U platform. I love it because it's still got the old people, nunchucks and all that good stuff, but it also has a pad that you can play now, and it's like a little handheld. I like handheld video games. I love the DS and the DSi and stuff. I like those. They're kind of fun because you can put them down. And this kind of has that feeling, and that's what I like about the Wii U. But I was thinking about this while you guys are talking about this. I'm glad I have a teenage son because, you know, he's got Nintendo 64, he's got a GameCube, he's got an Xbox 360, he's got a Wii U, and of course he's got his Steam platform, and he's got some DSs, so he's spoiled. Okay, I grant that, but I also get to toy around with some of these games, and I don't have to be, you know, I don't have to be invested in them. Like, he wanted the Deadpool game really bad when it came out, and I'm like, yeah, me too. So, you know, we got the Deadpool game, and I played a little bit of it. He played most of it. He beat the game, and it was like, that was fun. Oh, Lego Marvel for the Wii U. That's a fun game, and you don't have to play it for hours on end to get anything out of it. You can play it for a few minutes, put it down, you're good, and you come back to it. And I think I'm with you on that, Tim, is that, I don't want a game that I have to play for hours to get anywhere. And that's all the ones that that's what I got Isaac for. He'll play them for the hours, and I'll jump in every once in a while and kill his character off, and he has to restart. But, you know.
No, I did want to jump in here and say that I do own a PlayStation 3, and before I built my, well, I call it the Beast, and it is a beastly machine, if I do say so myself, I've always wanted to put together my own gaming platform, and when I put this thing together, I spent a lot of money on buying parts, and I wanted to be the best machine that it could be, you know, up to a certain amount, but I also wanted it to be a workhorse for, like, you know, video processing, and I wanted it to be a good all-purpose gaming machine, and it is. But I don't know that I've played my PS3 more than maybe an hour since I put this thing together. I have gone pretty much all in on the PC gaming platform, which is why almost all my games are in. I've slowly sold off all the games that I had on my PS3 and bought the Steam versions for my PC because the graphics are better. And, you know, and I mean, I'm a tech geek to begin with. I mean, I worked in technology for 13 years and I love computers. I love tech and I love reading about tech and I love immersing myself in tech. So it's just kind of a natural that I would be a PC gamer. And there's, of course, you know, an infinite infinitely more games available on the PC platform than are available on all the consoles combined. You know, and I would like to have a PS4 at some point, but I don't see it any time in the near future. I mean, there'd have to be a game that's exclusive to that platform that I just absolutely have to have, and that I haven't even heard one announced that I absolutely want to spend $400 on a console for.
Yeah, there's really not enough out there to make it really compelling. I have a PS4, and I'm really not entirely sure why I have one, other than I love to have the latest video gaming stuff. You know, it's funny you mentioned your PC, Eric, because that's actually kind of what prompted this discussion with Christian. Was he gives me grief because I have, well, like you said, I have this ridiculous PC that I've built, and, you know, it's got dual graphics cards and is amazing, nice. But I don't really game on it. And part of it is, you know, the games I really like to play, I like RPGs. That's my big thing. That's in my wheelhouse. I love fantasy RPGs. But as I get older, I find that, you know, a lot of times I just don't have, A, the time, and, two, the patience to put in the 100 hours it's going to take to squeeze the life out of Skyrim. I love Skyrim. It's one of my favorite RPGs of all time. But I have not come close to finishing that game. But, you know, it's just funny, as you grow older, your relationship to video games change. And video games as a medium has changed so much.
Yeah.
I picked up the Last of Us for the PlayStation 4.
Oh, what a great story that is.
That's a masterpiece of interactive fiction in my mind. And it's very, it's beautiful to look at, and it's quite an experience to play. And I'm looking forward to playing through it, but I've had it for, it arrived here while I was in Illinois, you know, for my month in Illinois. Mm-hmm. So I've had it since I've been back, and I still haven't opened it up and played it yet.
And, you know, here's the thing. A lot of people might tell me that my life is not balanced because I spend all my waking hours that I'm not working, you know, on things. Well, you know, I do plays, and I suppose that's a worthwhile endeavor. But, you know, I mean, all my free time I spend playing games, listening to podcasts, watching movies, TV shows. I would like to fit reading some more books in there. I've been listening to a couple of audiobooks here and there. I do split my time among all those things. There may be sometimes 2 weeks go by that I don't play a single video game, but then there'll be a week that I play almost every day for at least an hour or two. It just depends on what I'm in the mood for. But, you know, I do have all these other pastimes that I do split my time with. And I feel like that makes me, you know, maybe I'm fooling myself, but it makes me more balanced. I like, you know, taking a little out of group A and a little out of group B. And, it's good for comparing. I mean, like you mentioned, Tim just mentioned The Last of Us. I mean, The Last of Us is most certainly inspired by films, and it's probably one of the most cinematic games ever created. And it's, you know, and being steeped in cinema helps me to appreciate that all that much more. Be that as it may.
You know, in my opinion, it's both a beautiful and wonderful time to be a geek and a really horrible time to be a geek, because there is so much out there.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's just...
Yeah, every day is like Comic-Con.
Yes, yes.
It really is. It's ridiculous, the amount of content that's aimed at the things that we love. You know, there's so much out there to experience that... You know, it's a tragedy because you're going to miss about a good half of it.
Hey, that's what podcasts like this are for, so we can let people know the little pieces here and there. Tim, I mean, for example, you recommended a comic book on Last Time Around that I'd never heard of. I gave it I give that one a read, and I did. Video games, I think Eric's mentioned a couple of them, and Isaac has ended up loading them on Steam or had them on Steam, so I checked them out. So, yeah, see, that's what we're here for, is spreading the wealth.
Definitely.
It's true.
You had mentioned that I had read this as well, that they're doing a remaster of Resident Evil in HD, which is, I'm actually very excited about. Because, I mean, the first Resident Evil is probably the best of the series, even though it had mechanics issues and camera angles, and I'm hoping that they will address those.
Oh, don't beat around the bush. It controls like garbage.
Yeah.
Let's not beat around the bush. It's a horrible control scheme.
But if they can improve on that and do a nice remaster and fix all the little problems that were present in the first one, I mean, I'm very excited at the potential what a remastered Resident Evil could be.
That was one of the games I loved to watch too. Maybe it was the controls. Maybe that's why. But I just never could play it. I played it, but I just didn't like to play. But I like to watch people play it.
Oh, when I threw that controller across the room so many times when I played that game, the freaking camera.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yes. They
did say that they were looking into changing the camera so that you can rotate the camera to where it needs to be.
Oh, good.
And the controls will be a little bit improved. But I don't know, does that take it away from what Resident Evil is? I mean, part of it is that, the controllers are ass because, in that kind of situation, you would not react well. You would be, panicking. And there's nothing worse than running into a group of zombies and trying to turn this tank around and get the hell out of Dodge. Right, yeah.
That's about very accurate, is saying turning a tank around. But I have to say that, games that have obviously been inspired by, or you could say even ripped off, Resident Evil, like the Dead Space, the first Dead Space, scared the living bejeebus out of me. And you could control, and you were able to control the camera angle in that, but it kept enough of the difficulty of movement to be somewhat frustrating, but not necessarily throw the control across the room and cursing your like a sailor frustrating. So yeah. I think that there is a happy medium to be met there.
Maybe that's what this new one will be coming out with. Happy medium. So, let me ask you one final thing on this topic here. Have you noticed, it's probably an obvious answer, but video games anymore, they're actually, these people's movies now, the younger generation's movies, there's a whole theater going on with the way these the storylines play out, even with some of the graphics and some of the cutscenes. These are actual movies played out. Rather than having to go to the theater anymore, they just play it. Do you think that might make a difference?
I mean, here's the thing is video games are just now starting to come into a level where they can compete, on the same level with films. And there aren't many games out there that really can pull that off, but they're getting there, and they have managed to accomplish it. At least, almost half a dozen different games I can mention in the last few years that have, given cinema a run for its money. But it's still the exception to the rule. There's still a lot of work to be done, in terms of a cohesive story. So, yeah, I mean, an interactive movie is a great idea, and as we've already said, The Last of Us is probably the most successful example of an interactive movie that I can think of. I mean, there are games that have really good stories, like the BioShock Infinite. I thought had a great story. The ending of it just had my jaw on the floor, but it's not what I would call an interactive movie. It's a video game that happens to have a really good story built into it. Whereas the Last of Us is definitely what I would call an interactive film.
All right. Well, here, let me tell you this. Okay, we started out with video games like Space Invaders.
Right.
No storyline whatsoever. Well, they're making a movie out of Space Invaders.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but that
they made a movie
really
out of Battleship.
Yeah, that's true.
That was what I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, I think we've established that Hollywood suits don't know dick about making movies.
Oh, yeah, we have said that before, haven't we?
That's a well-established fact.
Now, there was and this may be a debate for another day, but Roger Ebert, God rest his soul, before he died, wrote an article about how he thought that video games could never be a quote-unquote art form the way that cinema is. Mm-hmm. And that stirred up a huge hornet's nest online and people coming in from both sides of that argument. I understand where he was coming from, saying that a work of art is a single vision that is not, where you can't, it's the director's vision or the author's vision. But then again, movies are a collaborative effort. I mean, there are some quote-unquote auteurs, but who's to say that, the actor, the lead actor, didn't present an idea that he incorporated into the film? I mean, we don't know that because we weren't there.
Yeah, no one person makes a movie. There's not a single movie that's made by only one person. Everybody involved in the process has some effect on the outcome.
Exactly. So I don't know how valid that argument is. And then there's also the fact that that video games, even though you feel like you're in control, it's almost an illusion because you're still going to wind up at the same basic premise. Some of them have multiple endings, but more or less, I think that there's a single storyline that you follow, even though you may take minor variances on that.
Okay, it's been a long time since I read that Ebert column, but I thought my takeaway was just that it's the participation in the video game renders it less of an purely artistic experience than watching a film that's composed by a group of people, you know. And I just think my take on it is honestly that he hadn't seen it. He was too old for it, honestly. And right. It's something that was meant for the next generation, and it's the same way that, you know, somebody who had his mind blown by going to see Sarah Bernhardt, you know, on stage back in the day would have thought, okay, that's the best performance anyone will ever see, and no one will ever be able to enjoy acting as much as this. Somebody that was, you know, in Shakespeare's day might have seen those plays and thought, well, no one will ever present this play better than that, you know, if they saw a definitive production, or so they thought. But they wouldn't have necessarily been able to see, I don't know, Throne of Blood by Kurosawa, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So the idea is that you know, they couldn't have even imagined cinema. And things evolved. Our friend Tom Stoltz was telling me that he and his boys have gotten incredibly involved in the storylines of, I think it was The Walking Dead game and The Last of Us, and just saying that they are as excited about and involved in those stories as any movie that they've seen, you know, or any movie that they're looking forward to. It has the same equivalence to them. And Tom's boys are maybe like 10 and 12, I think. And I think that generation are going to be served by interactive entertainment. It's going to happen. And I think there will be great films. The question is, will our minds still be elastic enough to be able to appreciate them?
Yeah. I hope so. I like to think that I'm still an open-minded and that I'm open to new art forms and, you know, new ideas. But
it takes work, though. It takes a lot of work to remain that way.
Well, as long as they have a controller that I can control being a head in a jar, I think I'll be ready for it. That'll be about the time.
But I will put down my foot and refuse to admit that today's pop music is actually music. I draw the line.
There's some that I enjoy. I actually like some of the newer groups. I like Imagine Dragons. I think they're really cool.
I like them. I like Mumford & Sons.
Yeah. Yeah. They're
okay. Wow.
That was the least polite or the most polite non-agreement I ever heard. That's so good.
Yeah. They're not like bad.
They breathe.
They're not. I wouldn't say they're bad. Let's put it that way.
Getting excited about rice cakes. I don't know. But
it is a bit like that. Yeah. Isn't this tofu delicious? Yum.
Yeah.
I mean, are these bands that you guys are talking about, are these like bands that they're playing on pop top 40 radio stations?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Because
Imagine Dragons
music,
is definitely.
Because there's music out there that I listen to. I mean, like, I just off the top of my head, I love Sharon Van Etten, but she's not someone you're going to hear on a top 40 radio station, not in a million years.
Well, I think it's important to continue to try to experience new material that's being put out by new artists. It's the only way that you can keep that elasticity. That's one of the benefits of having kids.
Yes.
You know, you still have a window into this world that of what's popular right now.
Unfortunately, though, there was a point when I had a teenage daughter and I'm like, I'm tired of Rihanna. So,
yeah.
But yeah, luckily I got Isaac.
Mean, you have to make that definitive move to say, okay, I may not like a lot of what I hear, but I'm going to have to keep listening because you never know when I'm going to run across something new that I am going to like. Or, you know, keep experiencing movies that I may or may not like by new people who are, you know, just starting out in the business. You've got to keep that, you know, at the forefront of your mind. Otherwise, you are going to end up like Roger Ebert and kind of refuse to see something, refuse to see the good in something that could possibly be good. That is a very good point. Yeah, the age really does affect your experience of something,
and
your acceptance of it.
Yeah.
I mean, how often are you able to even come to a common definition of what art is. Art is so ineffable and changeable that it, you know, it's a very personal, subjective term. I mean, you can look up art in the dictionary and there's going to be a definition, but you know what art is to each individual is going to change. Yeah.
Oh, it definitely is very subjective. That's part of what art is. I mean, it's your subjective response to something.
Well, all right. Well, speaking of art here, let me talk more about the Space Invaders movie. It's going to be called Pixels, okay? I got to tell you this. It's going to be produced by Akiva Goldsman. Somebody you may know him from Fringe.
Yeah.
Okay. It's going to star Peter Dinklage.
Oh, my God. Is that what that picture was from?
Yeah. And,
oh, with the mullet?
And,
oh, that glorious mullet.
And it's going to star Adam Sandler.
Oh, my God. Adam Sandler and Peter Dinklage in the same movie.
And
the apocalypse has arrived.
Oh, it gets better. It gets better.
You've instantly made me less interested in this.
It's put out by Warner Brothers. Okay, I had you at Peter Dinklage, huh?
You should have stopped there while you were ahead.
Yeah, it's going to actually be called Pixels, I believe, is what they're going to call it.
But I personally don't see any such, you know, barrier to video games being art. I don't know if they've quite achieved that yet. There's still some work to be done as far as story and themes to go, but they're getting there. And I don't see that. In fact, I'd be surprised if within the next 10 to 20 years, we don't see a game that can be that at least the majority of gamers can agree upon is a quote unquote work of art.
All right, well, I'll tell you what. Let's close out the podcast. We've been recording long enough. Let's get this thing on the air, get the audience out there. First of all, I want to make a few, you know, pleads for money. Well, not really necessarily for money, but help support this podcast. You can get some really, really cool swag, and not the Justin Bieber type swag, but like swag like T-shirts and stuff. You can go to nerduppodcast.blogspot.com, and we have a T-shirt store, if you will. It's a merchandise table. Click on the link. You can order all sorts of things. You can get purses. You can get handbags, whatever you want to call them. Guys, hey, I'm not one to judge, but you can get messenger bags. You can
get man bag.
All sorts. You get Christmas ornaments, all emblazoned with the Nerd Up Podcast crew. You got some things with our faces. You got some things with a little QR code that you can, like a T-shirt, you can wear around, and people can take their phones and, you know, scan your chest and find out what this Nerd Up Podcast is about. You've got our logo. You got all sorts of stuff. It's all on the website. Order it. Get the T-shirts. I want to see everybody wearing T-shirts in America that say Nerd Up Podcast. And if only I could find someone that was a graphic artist or something, maybe design some new logos. I'll have to look for somebody like that. Anyway,
be the first person on your block,
yes,
with a Nerd Up mug or a Nerd Up T-shirt. Make everyone else jealous. Be the first one.
Exactly. Can you imagine drinking coffee out of a Nerd Up podcast mug? How much more powerful you will be?
Please.
Oh, man. So anyway, order those on, check out nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. We got a little Cafe Press shop is what it is. And you can also search for us on Cafe Press. Help support the podcast. You can also donate. There's a little button if you just want to throw money, like you're buying a $3.99 comic book. Just donate $3.99 to the podcast every week. Well, okay, you don't have to do it every week. Anyway, so there's ways. It helps defray the cost of the storage for this long, blathering thing we call the Nerd Up Podcast. There's ways to support us. Check it out, nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. In the meantime, we're signing out. I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me at Gil Wilson, or you can reach the podcast at Nerd Up Podcast.
And I'm Eric Billingsley. You can reach me on Twitter at Eric Bill, ERICBILL.
I'm Tim Coker, and you can reach me at Tim K. Has to Say on Twitter.
And I'm the other Tim. You can reach me at Tim Gone Mad.
All right. That's it for the podcast. Once again, thanks, guys, for joining me. We'll see what happens next time around. In the meantime, stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.
www.gilwilson.com. If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out www.gilwilson.com. GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.